Well, we're almost at Easter, a couple weeks away. In the Gospel of John, we don't have one resurrection at Easter, we have two. We have a resurrection of Lazarus, and then the resurrection of Jesus shortly afterwards. Since John is not a historically oriented gospel at all, if you read that, you'll notice it. It is possible that and since it's also the only gospel that mentions a resurrection of Lazarus, it's possible that the Lazarus story is more of a parable than a historic fact. One of the things that John seems to do, or the writer of John, probably not the disciple John, seems to do in the Gospel of John is try to clarify and correct some of what he's seen in the other gospels. That's why you hear a lot of little comments as you read through that gospel. He's clearly familiar with the other gospels, familiar with Mark and Matthew and Luke, but chooses not to incorporate that material and to present a different perspective. However, reading these stories, whether they're historic or not, from a metaphysical standpoint, can help us begin to understand them in even deeper ways. As I read this story of Lazarus, I'm going to do a shortened version of it because it's a long story. We're going to be looking at the ideas of releasing and letting go of thoughts and things that bind us. The story starts off like this. A certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister of Martha. The sisters sent a message to Jesus saying, "Lord, he who you love is ill." And although Jesus loved Martha and her sister and their brother Lazarus, after hearing he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place that he was. And then he said to the disciples, "Let's go to Judea again, where Bethany is." And there's a discussion about a little argument among the disciples of whether that's a good idea or not. Eventually he says, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, and I'm going there to wake him up." And according to John, the disciples didn't understand what he was talking about, so they had to be clarified. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. And here we have the scene where Mary weeps, and it says in the Bible, Jesus weeps. But you'll learn more about that in a minute. Then Jesus, feeling moved, went toward the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laying against the front. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." And Martha, the sister of the dead man, said, "Lord, there's already a stench because he's been dead for 4 days." But they took away the stone, and Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I've said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they'll believe you sent me." When he'd said this, he called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, his hands and feet still bound with burial cloth, his face still wrapped in the cloth. And Jesus said to those around, "Unbind him and let him go. Unbind him and let him go." When we look at a story metaphysically, we look at what it symbolizes as what's happening inside us. The deeper meaning of what's going on inside us. Lazarus of Bethany is the key figure. We're the Lazarus. According to Jesus, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. We have fallen asleep to who we are, to what we are. The fact that Lazarus comes from Bethany gives us a hint about him. Bethany means house of figs. And if any of you have ever owned a fig tree, a real fig tree, they weep. They drip sap. They're known as weeping trees. They symbolize sadness. Lazarus, who's asleep, has been sad. This is emphasized with the name of the two sisters who are placed into this story, Mary and Martha, who in the language of the time, Mary refers to the bitterness, the difficulty of life here, the disappointment. She's the one that weeps, you'll remember. She's our emotional part that's going on inside us, disappointments with life. Martha, whose name implies the mistress of the household, is the practical one. She's the one that looks at everything from the human viewpoint. She's the part in us that looks at everything from the human viewpoint. What needs to be done? So when Jesus shows up, we have Mary weeping. And then it says in the Bible, Jesus wept. But it's interesting because it actually comments that he's not weeping because his friend Lazarus is dead. Remember, he knows Lazarus is asleep. He's coming to wake him up. He's weeping because all these people are missing what's actually happening. Martha and Mary and all the others are misunderstanding what's happening. So one of the first things he says from this Christ or God consciousness that Jesus contains, which represents that part in us, is take away the stone. Remove this obstacle. Remove this obstacle. To which the practical mind, the logical part, Martha says, wait a minute. It's been 4 days. It's already smelly. Forget it. You're too late. There's always that part that says that, no matter what we think of, isn't there? That little voice in us. No matter how inspired the thought seems to be. And then Jesus does an interesting thing. It says he looks up and prays to his Father in heaven. He lifts his thoughts up and he prays for the sake of the crowd. He's not praying for Lazarus. He's not praying for himself. He's praying for the benefit of those who are confused and missing what's going on. It's a shift to a higher thought. It's a shift to a higher thought. He prays to quiet the crowd of thoughts and emotions that are going on. And then he speaks the words, Lazarus, come out. Speaking to that part that has fallen asleep. That has fallen asleep. That needs to be woken up. At the end of the story, he directs us, as Lazarus does come out, he directs the people there, the crowds, Mary and Martha and the others, to unbind, let this guy go. Release and let go of those beliefs, those ideas of limitation, of sickness. Let go of the idea of death with which you've bound that inner divine Lazarus in you. Let go of that. Jesus, Christ's mind, is aware that Lazarus, God's perfect creation, has always been fine, always whole, always well. But he's fallen asleep. We've fallen asleep to that. Human emotion and practical logic have made Lazarus sad and ill and asleep and dead. Have made him feel dead. And only that higher mind, that God mind, that Christ mind, is able to shift that out. Easter is a time very much about overcoming beliefs and appearances in any kind of limitation, especially death. Especially death. It's about waking up to who we are in truth, who we always have been. And in order to do this, we have to do, among other things, some releasing and letting go. Letting go of all the thoughts and ideas we've been carrying around that aren't so. How many things have people told you about yourself that aren't so? How many things have you believed about yourself that probably aren't so? How much more awake and alive would you feel if you'd made the choice to release and let go of some of those things that aren't so? That have been making you sad or sick or asleep or dead feeling inside. It's interesting that when we get to Jesus' resurrection, there is preparation that takes place that he does before this experience happens for him. It starts with time he spends studying with John the Baptist out in the desert, moves on to him doing this baptism experience, this symbolic releasing and letting go of things. Jesus goes out and takes from that and goes out in prayer. And only at that point does he actually make a shift inside where it's like, I'm going to teach truth. I'm only going to teach what's true. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how upset they get. Truth is what counts. And only at that point does he become ready for that shift that he experiences at Easter. So the question becomes for us, what do we do when we're having a Lazarus experience? Because we all have those, right? We're sad. We're sick. we're just kind of asleep, or we're dead. We're feeling dead inside. Well, it's interesting that the story opens up with the sisters making a decision to call for Jesus. Jesus symbolically representing that God-connected mind, that presence filled with Spirit, asking for help. So we might want to, when we're having that experience, begin by asking for some help. Begin by asking for some help. But please notice that Jesus does not just show up right on the scene. There is a little waiting involved, right? There is some waiting involved. That's often part of the time of preparation, I believe. We're told that Mary and Martha didn't particularly like that either, right? Martha comments on it. But they did keep watching. So they did notice when he shows up. Maybe as we're doing whatever process we're doing, we're not only praying, but we're also watching to see when that Christ presence, when that God mind shows up. And in doing that, we're keeping our attention focused on what we actually want, right? What we're actually looking for, that higher perspective, that different way of seeing what seems to be a problem. So our preparation is more than just a quick prayer to Jesus or God and then, you know, back to our old ways, back to our old habits, back to weeping or worrying or whatever it is we like to do. In the longer story, the writer of John talks about the disciples questioning, even arguing about what should be done next. What's the best thing to do? Parts of us, the disciples, the parts in us that are still learning, because there are many parts in us that are in need of learning, may not know exactly how to pray, where to go, what to do. But fortunately, those parts don't have to be in charge. The part that we will invite to be in charge is that highest consciousness that we can connect with, that Christ or God thinking. The story includes, of course, the two sisters, Mary and Martha. When Jesus arrives, he finds Mary weeping. She actually symbolically represents that. She represents the emotions when they've kind of gone out of control. You know how we can get emotionally caught up in sadness or fear or whatever? Very challenging. Notice, though, that while Mary's weeping in the story, when Jesus weeps, he's not weeping for the same reason she is. She's weeping because she knows her brother's dead. Jesus is weeping because she's weeping and he knows the brother's not dead. And he's feeling sorry for her who's forgotten what's true. When we find ourselves caught up in that emotional state, and we do, sadness or whatever has taken over, it's going to be really helpful if we'll do a couple of things. One is notice our feelings. Notice what we're feeling. Don't run from it. I always often say to people, your feelings are your friends. Because your feelings often tell you that there's a need to see things differently or make a shift or do something different. They're good. They're good indicators. They don't tell you all of what to do, but they tell you that something needs to shift. And as we notice this feeling, the thing to do is to begin turning our minds to a higher perspective. To a higher perspective. As Jesus is moved by the suffering of the others around him, what does he do? According to the story, he immediately turns in prayer to his source, to his connection to God. And he does this, it's said, for the benefit of the crowd. To quiet the crowd. You ever have to quiet the crowd inside your head? Quiet the crowd, the sad, upset thoughts. An important step in the process of awakening our sleeping inner self. It's interesting to notice ourselves and notice our mental habits. Because some of us have a tendency to replay over and over in our minds emotional stories, sad stories, to just run them over and over and over. Some of us occasionally have a tendency to share those with others over and over and over. some people actually enjoy going to movies about sad emotional things, or reading books about, you know, emotional dramatic things. Can you see where all that energy is moving you? If our thoughts and what we focus on gives us more, oh, is that really what we want more of? Absolutely not. One of the things we can do in relationship to that is, to the best of our ability, to shift our thinking to the highest perspective we can and begin trying to reframe and relook at those things, maybe from a little higher perspective, maybe from a less dramatic perspective. Maybe we can find some gentler words, some less emotionally loaded words to use inside our own heads when we're looking back on some of those thoughts and things and thinking about people, whatever we're doing. That begins to take away the energy we've been pumping into the stories. And that leads toward healing, right? Because we're the ones pumping the energy in. But if we get stuck with things like repeating words like abused and traumatized and unjustly treated and how horrible it is, it's like the fire department showing up and throwing gas on the fire. You know, it's not going to solve the situation. We need to make a shift in our mind. The other sister, Martha represents the very practical part, the part that looks around, sees what is happening, and deals with things from that level. She's keeping track of how long it takes for Jesus to arrive. She's commenting on that to him. She's the part in us that measures how fast we're making our spiritual progress, how well we're doing with our prayers, how many seem to be answered, how many don't. Nobody has that part in them, right? No. Martha's the part in us that says, wow, you know, Lazarus, he's not looking too good today. His appetite seems to be off a little. I wonder if he's getting sick. Maybe we should go see the doctor. Gosh, I hope he doesn't die. That's the part that looks to the outside. Martha's the part that reads the morning news, you know, back in the Galilee Times or whatever, and says, I hear the barley harvest is pretty bad this year, you know? That could mean inflation and loss of jobs. Maybe a famine, you know? We better prepare for the worst right now. We better prepare for the worst right now. Keep laughing at it. Laugh at it when it shows up in your head. Seriously, laugh at it when it shows up in your head. Remember that it's not true. Can you imagine if your emotional sadness and regret gets together with your judgments based on appearances, this inner Martha and inner Mary? Can you imagine what that does to you, to the Lazarus that you are? No wonder you end up sad and sick and asleep and feeling dead inside. The stories are helpful teaching stories because they talk about things, states that are going on us that we can all identify with. And in the story, neither Mary or Martha, even though they loved Lazarus, neither one saw him clearly or correctly. Neither saw him as God's whole and perfect creation. Neither Mary's weeping nor Martha's commenting that he was already beginning to smell helped bring him back to life. The one thing they did that was extremely helpful, was to call for some higher help. In this case, symbolized by Jesus and that consciousness that was present in Jesus. Call for a higher perspective, a higher way of seeing things. Christ mind, God mind. We call that into any situation, into any place, and we begin to have the possibility for healing some of those old sad dreams. Some of those old sad dreams that cause us to fall asleep, to feel dead, to feel trapped. When that happens, we have the opportunity for a thought to show up, like the Jesus thought, you know? Oh, Lazarus is asleep. We need to wake him up. Not dead, sleeping. So for us, keeping our minds turned toward Christ thinking or God thinking, over time, and watching for it, does result in both healing and a release from whatever ideas have been binding us and keeping us trapped. The approach to this is actually pretty simple. I think of it as kind of a three-part approach. The first is to notice the feelings and the situations that are arising. Notice. Pay attention. Notice that something is being called for. The second is, when you notice that, begin going for the highest thinking you can find and inviting help from a highest source. Inviting help. And the third is releasing and letting go of whatever misdirected faith you've been applying to what you're seeing in front of you. The trust in those outer things is the final answer. Because as we release and as we let go of our trust in appearances and our old habitual patterns, what we find is we get set free, woken up and set free. So I put a simple affirmation in the back of today's bulletin, and it simply says, as I release and let go, I am released and set free. Let's share that together. Together we say, as I release and let go, I am released and set free. And again, as I release and let go, I am released and set free. One more time. As I release and let go, I am released and set free. Close your eyes and let that settle in for just a moment. As we, to the best of our current ability, choose to release and let go of the thoughts and the ideas and the patterns, the stories we've built up that make us cry, the things that we see in the world that we think we gotta fix. As we release and let go of these things, we actually create a space where a higher consciousness, a divine mind, a Christ mind, a God mind can begin to shine into us. Because we've released and let go of some of these things. We've made some room. And as we release, and as we open and let go, we actually find ourselves released and set free by a whole new awareness. A whole new awareness. We find ourselves no longer asleep to what's actually true. True in the spiritual and permanent sense of true. And we find the stones removed and the bandages that used to bind our hands and our faces removed. So as you go through the week, just invite the thought, as I release and let go, I am released and set free. As I release and let go, I am released and I am set free. Let's open our eyes and share that affirmation together again. Together we say, as I release and let go, I am released and set free. One more time. As I release and let go, I am released and set free. And so it is. Amen.